Welcome to the Doses Podcast, where we take on understanding American drug culture in small doses. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Doses Podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Monroe. I'm the president and founder of the Emerson College Team Awareness Combating Overdose Chapter, and I've been involved with harm reduction efforts and researching American drug culture for a little over a year now. And I'm on this mission to try and fully understand the way drugs work in America and to try to educate others in the process. So thank you so much for tuning in today. I can't wait to get into today's episode because we're discussing harm reduction and more specifically what it even means to say harm reduction. Harm reduction is this term we hear all the time when it comes to discussing drugs. And if you're new to the overdose conversation, harm reduction can be a really wild concept to wrap your head around. So today we're looking at definitions and trying to get a better understanding of what it even means to say harm reduction and to practice harm reduction. And I'm so excited because later in the episode, I'm going to get the chance to sit down with Tina Hallett, who's a program manager over at the Boston Public Health Commission. She's a harm reduction genius, and I'm so excited to pick her brain and see what she has to say about all of this. But before we get too deep into the topics of today's episode, I want to talk about today's sponsor. I feel so lucky to have this episode supported by Narcan. Narcan is a nasal spray that reverses the effects of an opioid overdose within minutes. It is a crucial piece to fighting the overdose crisis. So you can head on over to their website and use the promo code DOSES, that's capital DOSES, for 10% off your order. Be safe, be prepared. Carry Narcan. It saves lives, and you never know when you could come across an opioid overdose. So please head on over to their website or to your nearest pharmacy to grab a dose. So what do we mean when we say harm reduction? If you throw harm reduction definition into the Google search bar, the Wikipedia definition will come up, and it reads, harm reduction or harm minimization refers to a range of intentional practices and public health policies designed to lessen the negative social and or physical consequences associated with various human behaviors, both legal and illegal. Let's break that down. Harm reduction or harm minimization refers to a range of intentional practices, things that we are doing consciously, things that we have thought about and put into action in public health policies. A lot of time, harm reduction is backed by government, backed by people who have studied public health and know that this is the best way to look into this problem. Designed to lessen the negative social and or physical consequences associated with various human behaviors. So not changing the human behaviors themselves, but looking at the consequences and seeing what parts of that can be minimized, can be helped, both legal and illegal, meaning both things that we are doing within the law and things that we are doing outside of it, in this case, illegal drug use. And still, even after breaking that down, it seems a little confusing. So here are some examples of harm reduction in action, specifically when it comes to harm reduction for drug users. People will give out fentanyl test strips or host drug testing centers. A fentanyl test strip is a strip you can take. You can crush up your drug. You have to homogenize it, put it in water, throw a test strip in there, and it can tell you if that drug has fentanyl in it. Fentanyl lacing has been on the rise incredibly in the past couple of years. It's what's led to the insane increase in overdoses. And this gives people a chance to know if their illicit street pills are actually not what they thought they were and they contain fentanyl. People then can have the choice to throw that drug away knowing that it contains fentanyl and is likely going to cause them to overdose. There's also drug testing centers where people can bring in what they bought off the street and they can have these testing centers test it and tell them what exactly it is. They can also tell them if it contains fentanyl. They can tell them also if it's not the drug they bought, and then people then can have full autonomy when deciding what they put in their bodies, because if you're putting something in your body and you don't truly know what it is, that's not really full autonomy in the first place. There's also methadone clinics and doctors who will give out Suboxone prescriptions. Both methadone and Suboxone are narcotics that doctors use to help relieve people of opioid dependence, kind of wean them off of it in a way. And it's a controlled way for people to get better without having to go cold turkey and face the side effects of withdrawal. There's also sterile needle distribution sites, which is really where harm reduction starts and really where it kind of stays at its root. These sites, people can come in and they can throw out their old needles that they've already used and get new, clean needles, clean syringes. And this is then going to, of course, reduce the rates of STIs. When people aren't sharing their stuff, there's less chance that they're transmitting HIV or Hep C or other bloodborne viruses to each other. These sterile needle distribution sites often just have things to help keep people sterile anyway. There's sterile water that they can mix with their drugs, cotton balls that they can then put over the place where they injected, all sorts of things to help them stay clean and to help keep their bodies healthier. There's also HIV and Hep C testing sites, and a lot of these things are going on within the same facilities. This way, people can come in, they can get tested, they can know if they're HIV positive or Hep C positive, and they can stop the spread with themselves, and they can start seeking treatment. So those are some examples of what harm reduction looks like within this specific context. Like I said, harm reduction isn't just applied to drug use. That's just the biggest way we often see it. But the thing that people often worry about and ask about harm reduction is, won't that encourage drug use if people are safer, if they can confirm that they're probably not going to overdose because their drug doesn't have fentanyl in it? Are they not more likely to use? And the answer overall is no. However, you kind of have to contextualize it. The path to ending drug addiction and drug misuse in the U.S. is not a quick one. Even if it is possible, it's going to take time. It's going to be a lot of backward steps, and the path is way far from linear. But how I like to put it is that in the space before a perfect world, we can't shy away from the fact that people are using drugs. We can't ignore that it's a problem. That only makes it worse. The fact of the matter is, telling people not to do drugs doesn't work. Making drugs illegal doesn't work. We've done both of those things. We've been doing both of those things, and we still have a consistent addiction problem in the United States. People are going to use regardless, but there is a way to minimize the harm that they bring to themselves, minimize the harm that they bring to others, and that is where we find the necessity of harm reduction. I went to a webinar once for National Fentanyl Awareness Day, and somebody compared harm reduction to sex education. So when you think about it, we've got these states, right, that teach that the only way to avoid unwanted pregnancy and STIs is to just not to have sex. And they don't teach people about how STIs are transmitted, how pregnancy happens. They don't teach people about birth control, consent, all the educational tools that you need to make informed decisions. What we actually see in those states is that children are not listening to being told just not to have sex. And we see higher rates of unwanted pregnancy, higher rates of sexually transmitted infections. But if you then look at the states where kids in school are educated about forms of birth control, the necessity of condoms, ways in which they can engage in safer sexual health practices, they can learn how STIs are transmitted, what kinds of ones they are, where to find treatment, we actually see that the rates of STIs and the rates of unwanted teen pregnancy are way lower in those states. And when you think about it that way, it makes sense why telling people just not to do drugs has not worked. It's the exact same as telling kids just not to have sex. But if you educate people on the effects of drugs on their bodies and you give them the tools to do something safely, we see way lower rates of also STIs. We see lower rates of people getting abscesses, and we see higher rates of people ultimately choosing to get help at the end of the day. Harm reduction kind of emphasizes taking baby steps towards correcting the drug problem in the US. When you have a space that feels safe for somebody to come get tested, to come talk, to come test their drugs, to get sterile needles, to feel like they are cared about and like somebody cares that they are healthy and safe, there's a better chance that they'll feel safe enough to return to that space when they want to get better. Or maybe they don't ever at any point, but they're still better off than they were without those harm reduction materials. When you boil it all down, harm reduction is really about compassion. It's about people knowing they're worth being taken care of. Here's how harm reduction Lindsay Hartman put it in her TED Talk at North Central College.
Just having someone reach out and be there for you and not judge you, but help you guide and better and transform yourself, there's no words for that. Compassion changes people. What is the best motivation to seek recovery? You value yourself.
Harm reduction is about reversing the stigma and showing the world that people who use drugs, they're still human at their core. It's about helping people see that they are deserving of being taken care of. It's human kindness, human empathy, and human understanding that has the most powerful impact at the end of the day. That's what harm reduction is. All right, hopefully now we're feeling like we understand the concept of harm reduction just a little bit better. Before we jump into our interview with Tina, it is time for the drug of the episode, which is a little segment we do every episode where I pick a drug and we together learn some quick fire facts about it. And today we are looking at codeine. So, codeine. What even is that? So codeine is a prescription pain reliever and cough suppressant that acts as an opiate. Some street names for it are lean, purple drink, syrup, scissorup. Our standard dose is 30 to 300 milligrams, and our lethal dose is 500 to 1,000 milligrams. Something I'm always looking at when I'm looking at the difference between standard doses and lethal doses is the separation between them, and that's something that's significant here in codeine. If you're taking 250 milligrams of codeine, you're in that standard dose, double it, you're already in lethal dose territory, and doubling does seem like like a lot, but it's not necessarily something that isn't done when people are using drugs, especially recreationally. Some risk factors of codeine: it causes drowsiness and it slows breathing and it gives these feelings of intoxication. There's always an increased potential for fatal overdose if it's mixed with alcohol, ibuprofen, opioids, or depressants. And how is it consumed? So there's a pill form of codeine contended for oral consumption. A lot of times users are crushing this up and snorting the powder. And this is always something to take caution of if you're doing this, if you know someone who's doing it, because it's going to have faster onset and stronger effects. That is why people choose to snort drugs. It's going to come on quicker. It's going to come on stronger. And that is what a lot of people want from drug use. There's also the liquid form of codeine, which I think the standard person is a little more familiar with. Typically contains the anti-inflammatory drug promethazine, which also increases drowsiness. So that's a double whammy there. If used recreationally, it is always safer to combine liquid codeine with soda than with alcohol. Like we said before, mixing with alcohol then puts us into overdose territory. So better to mix with soda if you are going to consume it recreationally. But what does it do and how does it work? So codeine, once consumed and once it's in your body, is going to combine with enzymes in the liver. It's going to become morphine, and then it's going to turn on those opioid pathways in the brain, which then dulls the sensation of pain, relaxes muscles, causes euphoria. Our average onset time is 20 to 60 minutes, and it's going to last for about 4 to 6 hours. That's our duration. Something to always consider with drugs like codeine is that if it's not coming from your pharmacy, if you don't know where it comes from, there is always a chance that it contains fentanyl. Fake prescription pills, codeine included, have recently become very, very unsafe, and they are very, very often laced with fentanyl. So always proceed with caution. Always start small. Always test your drugs. Never use alone, and just have Narcan handy. All of our facts for our drug of the episode always come from Taco Incorporated's research team. Taco is a nonprofit run entirely by young adults on a mission to change the way we combat overdose. They're awesome. I've had the privilege of working for them for a little while now. Check them out at tacoinc.org or at tacoinc_Insta. If you're dying to know even more about them, make sure to check out our previous episode. I sat down with their CEO to talk all about their company. Okay, now the drug of the episode is done, it is finally time to get chatting with Tina and to learn a little bit more about what harm reduction looks like to a lovely little division of the Boston Public Health Commission called AHOPE.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so excited to get the chance to sit down and chat with you and to pick your brain. I've been really looking forward to this. And before we start, if you could just give us like a quick rundown of like you and your personal biography and what you're up to and your official position and stuff within AHOPE.
Thank you for having me. So my name is Tina Hallett. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the program manager at AHOPE Needle Exchange. We're located in Boston, Massachusetts, right across from Boston Medical Center on Albany Street. I've worked there for the last 2 years, just about. Before then, I was doing harm reduction work up in Gloucester. So definitely more like suburban, rural, like doing more like street-based outreach and van outreach around there and surrounding communities. And then before that, I worked at the Cambridge Needle Exchange in Central Square. That's where I started like my harm reduction career, I guess, even though I feel weird calling it a career. But yeah, before that, I was a bartender for like 8 years around Boston and Cambridge. Decided to go back to school when I was working at the Cambridge Needle Exchange, and I'm currently finishing my master's in social work at BU.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Can you also give us like a quick little like AHOPE elevator pitch, like a quick blurb about who you guys are and what your central mission is?
Oh, totally. Yeah. AHOPE is a harm reduction program and needle exchange. We are the largest program in Massachusetts. So we see about 8,000 unique individuals a year, up to like 200 people a day. We've definitely been much busier this past month with the recent tent ordinance in the city of Boston that has essentially criminalized homelessness and our people that we're working alongside of. So we're definitely busy day to day, but we are harm reductionists at our core and at our root. So we're really meeting people where they are to give them what they need, whether that be sterile needles and safer injection equipment, safer smoking kits. We have sniff kits, boof kits. We give out Narcan to folks that are actively using drugs, their family and loved ones, and then community organizations and businesses. We offer overdose prevention training to folks as well. So really trying to like get as much Narcan into the community as we possibly can. We are a public health program, so we do a lot of like healthcare related things. We are trained phlebotomists, so we will do testing for HIV, hepatitis, and STIs. We do a lot of wound care. We do a lot of medical referrals and treatment referrals to our like partner organizations like Boston Healthcare for the Homeless, Boston Medical Center, internally within Boston Public Health Commission. So really trying to give people whatever they need. We also give people like socks and underwear and food when we get food donations. We have a drop-in space where people can come and hang out, rest, charge their phones, watch TV, have a little bit of peace and a break from being outside. We do community drug checking as well. We have a community drug checking program. We're super lucky. We're actually the second program in the entire country to start a community drug checking program. We have a Bruker spectrometer on site, and we're able to take a sample of a substance about the size of a grain of rice from any of our participants, community members. It's totally anonymous and free, so you can just walk in. We take that sample, run it through the machine, and we can tell you not only is there fentanyl in it or not, but the percentage of fentanyl and different active and inactive cuts that might be in the drug. So then we can do like harm reduction education and safer use planning with people depending on what is in the drugs that they're using. We're dealing with like an unregulated street supply everywhere in this country right now and in most of the world. So really it's just like another tool we have to like give people information so they can be safer.
Yeah, I went in and volunteered with you guys last week, and I'm like kind of a harm reduction baby. I've only just started researching and doing volunteer work here for about a year. So it was really, really awesome to see what it looks like on a grant, a much larger scale. This may sound a little simple, but our theme of the episode is really like picking apart what it even means to say harm reduction. So can you kind of tell us why it's important that people have these resources available that you guys are offering?
I was drawn to this work. I'm a drug user. I was an IV drug user. So what drew me to the work, I think, was realizing years ago that like spaces like this existed where I could be safe and exist how I was. Like when I was actively using, for the most part, like I didn't go to needle exchanges or like have that sort of space where I could go and actually like be real and talk to someone. I think it's really important to not reduce people to behavior that they engage in. It's really dehumanizing. And the folks that we work with at AHOPE, the majority of them are experiencing homelessness. They're sleeping outside or now like in shelters because it's basically impossible to stay outside in the city due to the ordinance. But, you know, there's a lot going on and there's a lot of complex needs and they are so marginalized and treated so differently by the rest of the population here because they're actively using drugs, even within spaces that are for unhoused folks. That doesn't mean they're friendly for people who are also actively using drugs. So like there's that extra layer of marginalization that happens where like people get treated like animals and get treated less than. So it's so important to like have a safe space for people to go that are actively using. And they just deserve it because they're human beings, right? I mean, from like a public health perspective, we want to like minimize the transmission and rates of infectious disease like HIV and hepatitis C. A lot of folks we work with have hepatitis C. That stuff is transmitted from one IV user to the other if they have to share not only needles, but any of their injection equipment. And if we're not giving people access to the things they need to like make healthier choices, that's not okay, in my opinion. Like, people deserve access to healthcare and the things they need to be safe. Also, like, access to Narcan. For the longest time, Narcan, the name for the medication is actually naloxone, like, was not accessible outside of medical settings. harm reduction programs and needle exchanges have like created spaces where people who are actively using drugs that aren't calling 911 or maybe engaged in healthcare have access to life-saving medication. On top of having access to things like getting a Suboxone referral or getting help getting connected to a methadone clinic that's nearby, like all of these things are super important to help people make the choices they want to make. And yeah, at the end of the day, we're all human. So it's just like basic dignity and respect.
I have one final question. I'm curious, what is one thing or even a couple things that like the everyday person who maybe doesn't know as much about harm reduction can do to get more involved with like AHOPE's efforts if they want to like start being a part of this mission or they want to start learning more and being a part of it?
Yeah, so I think like definitely if you're able to reach out to me, I can say my email right now. It's challett@bphc.org. So challett@bphc.org. You can reach out to me via email and I can add you to our volunteer listserv. We have a volunteer night event once a month. We've been trying to get back to a more regular schedule of it being the third Thursday of every month. That's been tricky the past few months because of staffing. We're trying to get back to it, but we have that event once a month where people can come into our space, help us make harm reduction kits for our participants. And you also will get like a tour of the program. We'll talk to you about like our services in more detail. We can answer questions you have. We have like pizza and soda, which is cool. There's usually a pretty nice speech from our director, Sarah Mackin, or something just kind of giving people more context of AHOPE and like the historical implications of what we do in the city of Boston, which is a really cool way to get involved. People can volunteer with us more regularly if they want to as well. But we usually have people come to one of our events first just to check it out and make sure they like it. Our folks are usually hanging around out front if the police don't keep moving them because they know there's always leftover pizza. So it's also always cool if you run into people out front. They're very grateful for the volunteers and the help we get every month because it gives us more flexibility to work with them one-on-one if we don't have to make kits nonstop all day. So it's cool if you want to talk to our folks as well. We also, we help monitor the Boston Bad Date Sheet and the harmreductionboston.com website. We're partnered with other like harm reductionists in the city of Boston as like a collaborative effort to do more community work that way. So definitely check that website out for more like basic harm reduction information and like news about what we're up to.
Yeah. All right. Amazing. Thank you so much. That is kind of a wrap on all my interview questions. Thank you so much for taking time out of your very, very busy schedule to talk to me. I really, really appreciate it.
That's all for this episode of Doses. Thank you to Tina for volunteering her time and wisdom. Thank you to AHOPE for the amazing work they do. And thank you to you guys for tuning in. Make sure to join us next week as we dive into the Good Samaritan Law and figure out what exactly it protects and what exactly it doesn't. And remember to always be safe and be prepared.